Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for joining me. This week's show will have an interview with ESPN play-by-play man Mike Breen, calling the NBA playoffs right now. He will have the Western Conference Finals with Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson. And then he will have the Western Conference Finals, I should say, with Van Gundy and Jackson. TNT will have the East. And then Breen, Van Gundy, Jackson call the NBA Finals. During the interview, we talked about Mike's various analysts over the years. Obviously, Van Gundy. We get into what happened last week with Jeff screaming at Mark Jackson to pump the brakes. Talked about Hubie Brown, Walt Clyde Frazier, Bill Walton. I had forgotten until I did prep for the interview that Breen and Walton called the Malice in the Palace, so we discussed that as well. A little bit of Knicks stuff for the New Yorkers, since Breen does the Knicks games here locally in New York, and we talked about whether Durant's coming to the Knicks. So a lot of good stuff there with Mike Breen, and let's get to it right after I tell you to make sure you go into those archives. Subscribe and listen to anything you may have missed. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network Insider last week. Jim Nantz 2 weeks ago. So if you have not listened to those, give those a download. Subscribe to the podcast. It's huge if you can do that. All right. Now we get to Mike Breen from ESPN. All right. Joining me now, very excited for this, because I am a New Yorker. He's a New Yorker. But you know I'm on a national level doing the NBA on ESPN, the NBA Finals now for several years. Play-by-play man Mike Breen. Mike, how are you?
I'm good, Jimmy. Good to talk to you.
And we'll pull the curtain back here a little bit. We're starting this taping a little late because Mike had trouble with the Long Island Railroad, which I take every day. And I used to say the Long Island Railroad was the single worst company in America. I think it's DirecTV now. People who listen to this podcast know why. And I'd put Long Island Railroad probably second. And whenever someone who's not from New York wants to understand how bad the Long Island Railroad is, I always just say, this is how bad the Long Island Railroad is. It's 2019, and they still use a hole puncher to check tickets.
Well, they certainly have their flaws. I've had mostly decent experiences with it. But every once in a while, you feel like you're on a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode with Larry David on it, because you just, sometimes it's your fault, sometimes it's their fault, but it's always eventful.
Yes. Somehow my experiences are not as funny as Larry's, but it's
we need Larry to help make it a little bit easier.
So I'm fascinated. Let's start there. So you take the train, when you do the Knick games locally in New York on MSG, you take the train to and from work every day when you do the Knick games?
I would say over the past 10 years, I've taken the train to 99% of the Knick home games. It's too easy, because for those who don't know, the Long Island Railroad, the last stop at Penn Station is right under Madison Square Garden. So you basically, it takes you right to your office. And you could go from my house, where I live in Long Island, it could take 40 minutes to get to the garden, or it could take 2.5 hours. You just never know.
Well,
it just became way too easy just to hop on the train, because the train station is about an 8-minute walk from my front door to the station.
Right. That was my next question, because like I said, I am unfortunately very experienced with the Long Island Railroad. So if you have a 7 o'clock Knick game, what time do you take? You can't take a train that's supposed to get into Madison Square Garden at maybe 6, because it could always be one of those days where anarchy happens on the Long Island Railroad.
No. The Knick home games are usually at 7:30.
Right.
So I get in, I make sure I'm in by 4 o'clock.
Okay. All right.
Don't want to take any chances. And they're usually going home. There's a train right after the game. We don't do an extensive post game. They have a special post game crew that does most of that.
Right.
So I don't like to normally run out and get the first train after, for a couple of reasons. Number one, you like to talk to some people after the game and get their feelings. But also number two, during the stretches where the Knicks were really bad, you'd get on the train, the fans would recognize you, and they'd be angry, you know, because the team lost again, and they'd be upset. So yeah, You'd have to answer questions, which I love, actually. It's kind of fun, because nobody's ever mean about it. But sometimes after talking for 2.5 hours, the last thing you want to do is go over trade proposals and acquisitions and who played poorly that particular night. So usually I take the second train after the game.
Okay. That's got to be fascinating. You're on the train home, New York Knick play-by-play man, and you know, the Knicks have, to be kind, it has not been a fun 20 years at Madison Square Garden. So I can imagine, for people who don't know, those late night, you know, post 11 p.m. train rides, most people are partaking in adult beverages, and it could be...
Yeah, those are the ones, Jimmy, that can be, you know, a little trying at times. But most of the fans, you know, they're so polite and they're just so passionate and they love their team, so they're just desperate for a winner. So those ones you can enjoy. It's the occasional one that, as you said, has gone a little over the top in terms of how many beers he's consumed.
Right. But since we're talking Knicks, we'll get to your work at ESPN and the NBA playoffs and finals and all that stuff. But we're on Knicks, so let's just stay here for a minute. I don't know if you, the inside knowledge you'd have, your feeling, gut feeling, what you're hearing around the league, but the Kevin Durant to the Knicks rumors seem to be strong. Any idea on whether Knicks fans should maybe keep their fingers crossed and something like that can happen, or you think there's no chance?
I have zero idea, right. Absolutely zero idea. And, you know, I read everything like everybody else does, and I hear the reports. But my opinion, I like to concentrate on what's going on this year. Like, he's had a phenomenal playoff run. I want to enjoy his talent for what he's doing for Golden State this year. And I feel a lot of our business, and I understand it. And, you know, whether it's TV, radio, or print, or social media, there's so much attention on where these guys are going to play next year. Right. Well, they're playing for a team this year, and some of them are playing unbelievably well, and some of them might be struggling. I think a lot of the players themselves don't know where they're going. So for me, a lot of it's a waste of time, this nonstop speculation on where they're going to go. We're going to find out. But let's wait for the season to end, because I really do believe most of the players aren't exactly sure where they're going. But then again, we're hearing reports, oh, they're definitely going here. So I think a lot of it's a waste of time.
I also think the Knicks fan is, they're setting themselves up here for maybe a letdown, because if he doesn't come here, and then what? You know, it's the vibe from Knicks fans is that they're expecting it, and, you know, whether the rumors are true or not true, that, you know, there's rumors out of Durant's camp he's coming. And then if it doesn't happen, it's just another blow to this fan base.
That's it. There's two types of Knicks fans with this. Some that are just, they're praying and hoping and talking about him. Oh, he's coming. We got him. He's going to be our guy. And then there's the other ones that, like, don't even mention it. I don't want to know it. You're going to jinx it. I don't want to have my heart broken again. So that goes back and forth. And we've both been around long enough to know that. How often have we heard, oh, he's definitively going here, there's no question, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It happens all the time, where the expected destination never comes to fruition.
What I think is even worse than the speculation is when, I remember this with LeBron, when the teams around the league are basically making the pitches for LeBron to come here, and I remember the Knicks, they made some pretty embarrassing promotional video with all the celebrities. And I remember, because I'm a big Howard Stern fan, I know you were on IMA, so I want to get into that too, but I remember they asked Howard to do it, and he was making fun of the Knicks. They put up billboards in near Madison Square Garden, and then the guy doesn't come, and you look desperate.
Well, some of those are done by fans who just want him to come, which is incredible. And, you know, so much of the leaks are from agents of a particular player. Some are for leaks from agents of other players, because it might benefit their client if he goes one way or another. So everybody has an agenda in terms of these leaks. And that's why I think so much of it is again, a waste of time. And sometimes it's a bit reckless, too, because people are stating like they know fact, and many don't know fact in these instances.
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm curious. I feel like we're talking about the Knicks fan, and it's been a horrible, horrible run here for the Knicks. And I don't know if, because it's been so bad lately, the sort of positive memories and the nostalgia for the Riley Van Gundy years increases. But I used to be a diehard Knicks fan back then, and now it's really hard. But I feel like those years are almost underappreciated now in New York. I've always thought Ewing was the most underappreciated athlete in New York history from in terms of when I was alive. And people in New York have no clue, I feel like, what the Garden was like and the stranglehold the Knicks had on the city during those Riley Van Gundy years. And I don't know if because they're so bad now, that point is even more emphasized. How do you look back on those years when it was when the Garden was buzzing and it was really the place to be every night?
Well, I think, Jimmy, the you know, all depends, the recollections depends on your age. I'm 57, so people my age, it's still so vivid. And there was a stretch there where it was the most electric building in all of professional sports. It's still, when there's a big game, there's no better place than Madison Square Garden. And that was because not only the Knicks were great at that time, but the Rangers were obviously very good. This is in the mid-90s. We tease Clyde all the time, all of us at the MSG Network. And it's the same way with players like John Starks and Larry Johnson, who work for the team and are very visible around the Garden. With every losing year, they become more popular.
Right.
Because of those memories.
Yeah.
And they become more beloved because people do think back. The amazing thing, though, now is, and this even happened this year in a 17-win year, if you're at the Garden and the Knicks, it doesn't matter who they're playing. They could be playing the Phoenix Suns or they could be playing the Golden State Warriors. If there's 3 minutes to go in the game and the Knicks are down two and have the ball, the place is, it's amazing, the atmosphere and how fired up the crowd is. And it's such a loyal fan base, and they're just so hungry and so desperate for a good team to root for. It doesn't even have to be a championship team right now, just a competitive team that's going to play in the playoffs or play meaningful games, that I'm blown away every year. Since I was a little boy, I was a Knicks fan, and obviously lived in New York my whole life, but to still see that night in and night out, even on the worst possible seasons, to me is extraordinary.
It'd be nice if they got good, that's for sure. But I don't want to put you on the spot there as the team's play-by-play guy. You grew up as a little boy a Knicks fan, and then you ended up becoming the Knicks play-by-play guy, and now you're calling, I think it's going to be your 13th NBA Finals coming up. Is it still just as satisfying today as it? I mean, you've been doing this now, I think, 28 seasons. Even though the Knicks are bad, is this still the lives up to the hype of the dream job? Is it ever too much for you? Because I would think during the season, doing the Knicks and then the ESPN work, maybe it's a lot of work, travel, you have kids, or is it still the greatest thing in the world?
When you're walking into the building, or when you sit down and get ready for the opening tip, it's the same thrill every night. Now, I'm not going to kid you. Obviously, you know, calling a finals game is a little more thrilling than a Knicks-Suns game in March when both teams have been out of the playoff hunt for 2 months. But I fell in love with the game when I was little because of you just never knew what was going to happen, whether it was a team with this unbelievable team performance that they put together, whether it was an individual who played the best game of his life. It's a wonderful team game to watch, and when it's played beautifully, to me, there's no better sport. So I get that thrill, but especially as a kid growing up, loving the Knicks, to be able to sit courtside at midcourt at Madison Square Garden, it truly is amazing. And what I try and do every once in a while is I'll go up in the stands, go about 20, 25 rows up in the stands and sit in the seats when the fans are first allowed in.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see different reactions. You get to see the curmudgeon Knicks season ticket holder for the past 30 years. You get to see a kid coming with his dad for the first time in his life. You get to see a family where this is what they do every single Tuesday night. And to see how much they can't wait to get in their seats and watch their favorite team, it's a great reminder to me that I have the greatest job in the world. And I really do feel that. I know it sounds corny and cliche-ish, but I think I'm the luckiest guy in the business because I'm calling the team that I grew up loving and the sport that I love more than any other.
And even though it's the greatest job in the world, does the travel ever get to you, or the schedule, you know, during the season when you're doing Knicks and ESPN, or you have it down pat where it's not a problem for you at all still and it's
easy? No, of course, the travel every year gets a little harder as you get older.
Yeah.
you know, we all have our horror stories of delays, of sitting on airplanes that go nowhere, of cancellations, of missing connections, of lost luggage. I mean, that's all part of it. It is easier from the team standpoint with the Knicks in that you get to fly on the team charter. So that's, you get to be a spoiled brat pretty quickly doing that. But that's really the only part. I mean, like any job, you have your things that are a pain in the neck, whether it's the travel, whether it's lack of sleep, et cetera, et cetera. But that's all such minor stuff compared to the privilege of being able to call these games. Jimmy, in my wildest dreams, I never ever thought that I'd be calling the NBA Finals this amount of years in a row. I have been blessed far more than I certainly deserve, and it's something I really try never to forget.
You know, it's funny. I don't know why. This is more about me than anything. But for some reason in my head, I feel like you and Jeff Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, I feel like it's been like a handful of years that you've called the finals. But then I was looking it up. You guys have been doing it a while now. It's been the three of you have done it a while. You had the two seasons there without Mark Jackson when he went back to Golden State, and then he came back to the broadcast team. The chemistry is there, obviously. Van Gundy's a character and probably the best analyst in the NBA. Does it feel like you've been doing the NBA Finals for as long as you have now? Because it's been you're on a good run here.
No, yeah, it's I think you said 13. It might this coming year might be the 14th.
Yeah, you did it
and
1 year without
all but one with Jeff.
Right.
And Mark, 3 years he was off when he was the Golden State coach. So it's Mark's 11th. It's Jeff's 13th. It's my 14th. And to get to that many, it's incredible. You know, as a kid, you know, listening to I was a huge Dick Stockton fan, still am. Mm-hmm. Obviously a New Yorker. Marv was and still is the standard for play-by-play. So listening to those guys do the finals, and now to be able to say that I'm doing the same thing. It's hard to believe, and to do it with Mark and Jeff, two guys who I basically grew up in the league together. Right. When I first started doing Knicks, I was doing radio, and Jeff was the assistant coach, and Mark was a player. And you know, if you would have told, I think either any of us that this would be happening, I think we all would have laughed at you and thought there's no way that could possibly happen.
Did you and Jeff and Mark have chemistry right off the bat? Obviously, like you said, you knew both of these guys from Mark Jackson was a Knick, Van Gundy was Knick's coach. So there's a relationship there. You don't always know, you could have that relationship in real life and then you got to get on TV and call a game and you don't know if there's going to be that chemistry translating to the TV audience. Was it there from the beginning for you guys? Forget the audience. Did you feel it right away?
Yes, because, again, we'd been friends for a long time, and I understand what you're saying. It doesn't always translate on the air, but I think it's the most underrated part of chemistry between announcers. Sometimes it happens right away. Sometimes it takes a few years. But if you're really comfortable with that person and you've known them and you know their families and you know their history, and the other thing is, we're all around the same age. So, you know, television shows we grew up with are all the same.
Right.
Sports heroes that when we were kids are the same. So there's so many things that we have in common. So when you bring up pop culture references to have some fun, or you bring up the history of the game, we're all similar in terms of what our recollections were as kids, as teenagers, when we first came into the league. We've been around for the same changes. And I really think that's an underrated part that makes it easier. And even with that, the other thing too is lack of ego. And that to me, for Jeff and Mark, there has never, ever been a fight for airtime. I mean, they're always looking at each other like, all right, you go, now you go. They acquiesce to each other so many times. And they have not just admiration and a friendship, but there's such respect together for each other that, you know, they can have an enormous disagreement on something. I mean, 180 degrees on either side and go at each other and nobody gets offended and nobody gets upset. It's almost, it's a part of, to me, what makes their friendship so good. I mean, we just had one last week in Philadelphia.
Pump your brakes.
So it's like you know, he goes and says how great Joel Embiid is, and right. Jeff comes right back at him, and vice versa. Jeff will say something, and how many times does Mark say, "What are you doing?" And that's one of my phrases. One of my favorite phrases from Mark is Jeff will say something outlandish, and Mark will be going, "What are you doing, man?" It's just the way he says it, and there's never any bruised feelings when they have those arguments.
Yeah.
And to me, that's why the three-man booth works with those two. I'm not a huge fan of three-man booths. I think for some reason, and I think the things I just stated are why it works so well with those two, because there's no competition between the two, and neither one of them, you can hurt their feelings if you disagree with them.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about two-person booth versus three-person booth. I feel like the networks just use three network now as sort of a crutch. It's like the thing to do. But when you get it where it works, in the case of you guys, obviously, especially for Van Gundy, because he has two people he can sort of riff off of with you and Mark Jackson, like you said, as we saw last week when he went nuts, which was phenomenal television. Now the NBA, the game moves so quickly, and as the play-by-play man, you have to just constantly be speaking and talking about what's going on, and the action is rapid fire. Is it tough for you to set, when you have two analysts like that, do you still want to set them up so they can make their point, or is the game too fast where it's harder to do that in the NBA? Because a lot of play-by-play people, you know, one of the big parts of the job is setting up the analysts.
No, it's not hard. Not that they need any setting up. You know, sometimes, you know, especially early in games, I'll throw questions at them just on in terms of, you know, big picture about the particular teams that we're doing that night or a particular player. But they play off each other so well. They also know when's the time of game to back off a little bit. And that's nothing I've ever had to tell them. They just have a great feel and instinct. It's just being around the game so much. But one of the great things is that I never have to preview what I'm going to ask them. You know, there's some people who work as analysts. If you're going to ask them a tough question, they'd prefer if you ask them during the commercial so they can think about it. These guys, they don't want to do that. They don't want to rehearse. They want it to be spontaneous, and they want to be able to react off each other and off what I ask them, without any preview. And I think that's one of the things that make them so good, because, you know, they're not thinking of a canned response. They're thinking about how they feel, and that's what they're saying.
And knowing that Van Gundy can sort of get a little agitated, and I mean that in a positive way, not a negative way, are there certain topics you know in your, you know, I don't think when Mark Jackson was sort of trying to put Joel Embiid in historical perspective, he expected Jeff to go nuts. But are there certain topics you know in your head where if you throw this out there, Jeff will take it and go with it and give us something extra salty? Or do you not do that?
Oh, no, sure. No, yeah. you can. It all depends on the game.
Yeah.
You know, we tease them all the time that the worst thing for us is when it's a 25-point game, middle of the third quarter, because now his mind is wandering and he's thinking about a lot of different things and you don't know where he's going to go. But they turn out to be sometimes the most fun moments. See, the thing with the two of them is they care so much about the game. So even if they're upset about something or they want to go on a rant, it's basically because they want what's best for the game. And they think, okay, right now this is not working, either for a team, for a particular player, or for the league. And they think maybe their idea would be a better idea. And sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong, just like I am, just like anybody who does it is. But that's what their love of the game is what takes them there. And sometimes the rants are serious and sometimes it's just fun. I mean,
right.
Neither one of them take themselves too seriously. They love to poke fun at themselves. And I think that's because they also realize that, yeah, we're broadcasting basketball, but it's also entertainment.
Right.
And during the course of a long season, you got an 82-game schedule, and we're doing so many games, a little comic relief goes a long, long way.
Absolutely. And the fans, I can speak from my experience doing what I do with the daily column on SI.com. The fans love the comedy when it gets, you know, mixed into the game. I'm curious. Now, I love Van Gundy. I think he's the best analyst in the NBA. As a Knicks fan, I love Van Gundy because he was a great coach. Alonzo Mourning, grabbing the leg, we all know it. He was on this podcast last year. He was a great guest. So I asked this question from love, not from disrespect. Is he as curmudgeonly off the air in terms of, you know, if you've got to maybe be on a plane with him or ride in a car rental car driving to the arena, is he as curmudgeonly off the air as on the air sometimes?
No, he's funnier off the air, right, in many cases. I used to tell people when he was the Knick coach, when he took over, and everybody who was a Knick fan remembers his post-game press conferences. It was must-see TV because he had that serious look, and it was, you didn't know what he was going to say or who he was going to lambast. And I would tell people all the time, you have no idea how funny this guy is. And they would say, that Jeff Van Gundy, the one who's on the post-game after a Knick loss? But he's always been like that. And, you know, I tell people the car rides to and from the arena are as entertaining as anything because you don't know what discussions they're going to get into. It could be, you know, about Mark loves the Yankees, so it could be something to do with baseball. It could be boxing. It could be any other sport. It could be politics. It could be, you know, pop culture, favorite TV show. There's so many different things they go, and their arguments off the air are much, I mean, I'd say much more fun, sometimes just as fun. It's just that they're just always goofing around, having fun, making fun of each other, and it, again, it's what makes it work is that, you know, they know each other so well and nobody's feelings get hurt.
Can you share a recent argument? I don't want you to tell tales out of school, but is there something they argued about or you argued about with Jeff recently in a car or on a plane that got extra heated, that was amusing?
Well, we have a... this has been going on a while on this one. And I told this once before, and they might get mad at me for telling it, but there was a debate now on whose funeral would you go to? For example, if it was somebody you knew from work, but you were on vacation, that was the whole debate. If you're on vacation and you found out like a certain person had passed away, would you leave vacation to go to the funeral? So they're debating going down the list. And the main reason they did it was because our statistician, Dave Fried, who is, as in my opinion, the best NBA statistician out there, and there are a lot of great ones. But Dave is just a lovable character that everybody loves to make fun of. And that was the whole idea to get through that about, okay, so if we're on vacation in the summer and Dave passes away, are you leaving vacation? And of course, just to needle Dave, they're like, nah, I'm not if I'm on vacation. If I wasn't on vacation, I'd come to the funeral. So stuff like that, it's just, you have no idea where it's going, where it's coming from. And it always makes it interesting.
It's actually a phenomenal debate, and that also can be the basis, I think, for a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode that we mentioned.
Yeah, for sure. There's no question.
You can see Larry on vacation debating whether to go to Jeff's funeral or not. I mean, there's no doubt.
Right.
The last thing I'll say about Van Gundy, and then we'll move on to something else, is I think one of the great quotes in New York sports history, when the Knicks and Bulls were having their rivalry back when the Knicks were good and Jordan was around and the Bulls would always beat the Knicks or whatever, and you know, Phil Jackson back then, again, talk about different eras, now he's thought of as, you know, this joke, but back then Phil Jackson was winning all these titles, and Jeff called him Big Chief Triangle, and I thought it was one of the great little shots of all time in New York.
That was a great line. That Phil called him, I can't remember, he would call him Gundy without the van. He would call him Van Gumby. So Phil fired the first shots on those, and Jeff had a great, as you said, a great retort.
Other analysts you've worked with over the years, you know, it's amazing. So we talked about how you've been doing the finals so long with Jeff and Mark. The first year you did the finals, I believe in 06, was with Hubie Brown, two-man team. Hubie Brown did the game yesterday, on Sunday, 85 years old and is still as good as ever, has not fallen off even 0.0001%. It's amazing to watch.
He's a national treasure for NBA fans. For me, he's really become a father figure to me. The amount of things I've learned from him, and he's somebody that realizes that this game has given him an unbelievable life for him and his family, and his appreciation for that is it can be very emotional and overwhelming sometimes when he goes around the league, and obviously he knows so many people, and the way people approach him and the respect that he gets from former players, from current players, from coaches, the current coaches, when we go sit in a meeting, and I get to do usually about 6 or 7 games a year with them, and you go meet with the coaches before the game, the respect factor when UB asks a question, it's really quite amazing. And like you say, at his age, to be traveling around the country doing national TV games, it's incredible. And we are all hoping that it doesn't stop for a long, long time, because he's not slowing down. He had a bad injury last year, had to have surgery, and he bounced back and had a great year this year. He really is a national treasure.
That is amazing, because you watch the game and he is telling you things that are happening before they happen. He's telling you, you know, there's a screen up top that this guy's going to cut here, and then it happens. At 85 years old, the pipes are still there. It's really remarkable. I think it's one of the more underrated media stories out there.
I couldn't agree more. And when he did it, I think we did a game 2 years ago. He did a game with Ryan Rucco. Ryan, who's such a talented young play-by-play man.
Yep.
At the time, I think he was, I'm going to say 28 or 29, and UB was in the early 80s. And we had to think, now nobody has, I guess, the answer to this. So I guess you could figure it out. It had to be the biggest age disparity between partners, on-air partners, in the history of broadcasting.
Wow.
I can't imagine it being any more. And the beauty of it is that UB relates as well to, you know, a young broadcaster like Ryan, or, you know, somebody who's been doing it a long time. And he takes that same approach with today's player. You know, some older broadcasters, older players will say, we did it better. You know, we're more fundamentally, it was more a team game. Not UB. UB is just blown away by the athleticism and the talent of today's player. You never hear him say he'll compare eras, but there's no thought of, it was better back in the day. He's blown away by today's game. He still has the love and the passion of the game today as he did when he first got into it.
So you work with Van Gundy. You do a handful of games, like you said, with Hubie. And then for the Knicks, you're doing the games with Walt Clyde Frazier. And you guys have been doing those games a long time together now. What is it like working with Clyde? And do you ever get shocked by the suits he shows up in?
Well, no, the best thing about the suits is watching the players on the visiting team in the layup lines when he comes out to do his stand-up. Now, the current Knicks, you know, they see it every night, so
right. They
get used to it. But it's the visitors, and I'm talking about rookies, veterans. They'll stop in the layup line, grab one another, and point over and say, look what he's got on. It's really funny how they're distracted by it.
Yeah.
But he's one of the few people that can pull off those outfits. I always kid him that he's 74 now, 73 or 74. He looks the same as when I first started working with him 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And he's loving it just as much. And this was a guy that my mother still lives in the same house in Yonkers that I grew up in. And I was over there last week, and in the basement, the same place in the basement where we used to have, I grew up with a family of 6 boys. We used to have the weights in the back. There's a poster of Clyde that I put up when I was, I guess I must have been about 12, and it's still up there. The same poster is still up there. So to go from that to not only being his partner for 25 years, but have this wonderful friendship is another thing that I have to pinch myself about.
You know, he came out hard this year during one game on LeBron, which I was surprised at, just because that doesn't seem like his style. Not that he's shy about knocking players, but that was for Walt. I thought that was. I remember being taken aback that he went that hard at LeBron when you were sitting there. Did you do that game with him? I shouldn't assume you did that game with him because you do the ESPN game.
I didn't, but I read all the stuff afterwards, yeah. And we brought it up the next telecast as well. And it was unlike him, and that's why it was so, to me, so powerful. Mm-hmm. And he said if it was any other player but LeBron, he wouldn't have said anything. But his feeling was, you're the best player in the world. You're the one that every other player in this league looks up to. You're a different standard. You have to be held to a different standard, and you have to know that. And he's always felt LeBron has held himself to that standard and carried himself. So for him to be out of character and not do the right thing, I think is what upset Clyde so much. That's what he said.
Since you mentioned that we brought up the LeBron thing, I want to get back to one more analyst you had, but let's stick to LeBron for 1 second. Because I thought this year, obviously goes to the Lakers. It's a disaster. Now Magic leaves. But I get the feeling, and I'm just a fan, so I'm not in it like you, that people are looking to sort of knock down LeBron a little bit. And I think it's always been that way, but especially this year, when usually they're trying to knock him down and then he's in the NBA Finals every year and he's putting on the greatest show on earth, so it's harder to do it. But I kind of felt like this year, and this isn't about Clyde, this is just the whole year in general, it felt like the vultures were out a little bit on LeBron. Did you get that? Do you get that feeling? Am I nuts? Or?
Yeah, well, this is the second time he's been through it. The first time was worse when he went from Cleveland to Miami. He was the number one villain in all of sports.
Right.
It's amazing the turnaround when you consider, I'll never forget that year on the road, the abuse that he took. And you know, it was really rough. He was, without question, the league's number one villain. And then he completely turned it around. Again, because of the way he's always carried himself as a teammate, as a guy, win first. And then with the way he handles himself with social issues off the court, you know, the different things he's done, whether it's the new school in Cleveland. So he's always been very socially aware and up to date on issues. So he's done everything right with a few exceptions. And that one exception, of course, was, you know, take my talent to South Beach and then that terrible press conference where they talked about not one, not two, not three titles. So he took abuse for a while. It's not nearly like it was there, but I think you're right. You know, he had a couple of what you would call missteps this year, and people pounced.
Right.
But I think that's just our society where, you know, the old thing, you build somebody up, and there's always somebody who's waiting to tear them down or find dents in the armor that they can do to poke at. But that's something that goes on. But he still has, you know, tremendous respect. Some of the stuff that went on this year wasn't handled so well, which is unusual for him.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, if they get a couple of free agents and they're up there again, he's going to be, you know, he'll be the hero that he always has been
to a lot of people. As the lead play-by-play man for the sport, do you have that thing where you wish the Lakers were good because it's such a big market and it's the Lakers, or you'll do any game, you know, the Warriors are on this great run and it doesn't matter to you, or do you want that Laker you know, mystique and aura to be back as someone who's calling the games?
Well, the Lakers are the number one draw, and especially with him. He's been the number one draw for years.
Right.
The number one draw in terms of team when they've been good has always been the Lakers. Now, Golden State has supplanted that in recent years. But you combine the Lakers and LeBron, and that's, you know, it's ratings gold. So that's from a business standpoint, that's what you want. He's such a magnificent player in so many different ways that I love to watch him in the playoff atmosphere. So I miss watching him perform in the biggest games of the year. I miss watching him perform when the pressure's at its highest. So that's more of my feeling, not necessarily. I mean, I can't worry about ratings. We broadcast the games that are in front of us.
Right.
But I just, as a player who is certainly in the conversation of one of the all-time greats, I want to see him as much as possible before he calls it quits, and especially come playoff time. So that part is was disappointing that they didn't make it in.
You mentioned how the Warriors have supplanted the Lakers. You probably can't answer this question, but I'm going to just throw it out there, and you're a funny guy, so you can ad lib it and have fun with it. But your call, the ESPN has the Western Conference Finals this year, TNT has the East, so you'll be calling, you might be calling the Warriors. I'll say you're going to call the Warriors, but you might call the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, and then do you get tired at all of the, like, are you tired at all of the Warriors and calling them year after year? Or, you know, because it's Steph Curry and Durant and there's storylines and Steve Kerr's great, there's still enough there?
You know, I wish I was around to watch the Celtics dynasty. I wish I was around to watch Bill Russell play in his prime instead of just the highlights that I see. I'm jealous of those who got to watch that. So anytime you have a chance to watch greatness, sustained greatness, and teams that are at a level that despite everybody gunning for them, they still figure out a way to win it, to me, that's one of the great things as a sports fan, whether you have a vested interest, if it's your team, or it's a sport that you love. So it's so much fun to watch them because it's such a struggle to stay up there with everybody gearing for you, and they're able to do it. That's number one. Number two, their style is what makes them so much fun. They are such an unselfish team. All those guys could easily average 30 a game for other teams, but their number one priority is to win. And their teamwork with all that talent is incredible. And that's hard to do today with the egos and the contracts and guys talking about their brands and what's their, you know, legacy, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yet they've been able to stay away from that. And again, that's, Jimmy, why I fell in love with basketball, because it still is a team sport. You know, we highlight individual stars, but, you know, whether it's this Golden State team or the Spurs back in 2014, when you see a five-man team working so well together, it's the most beautiful thing you could ever see. And that's why I love the game. That's why I love this team. And even though there's so much talent, they're different personalities, and they've still figured out a way to stay hungry about winning and not concerned about how many points they score every night.
Yeah, I get the vibe that fans may be tired of it a little bit. You know, the fans don't have that appreciation that you may have, and as someone who's in it, I just think fans always seem to want new blood, and the Warriors are really, you can respect what they've done and then still want to see maybe some fresh faces, but I'm sure for ESPN they'd love Golden State in there, because I think, you know, when you have Durant and Curry, people will tune in even if they're tired of it. Let me get back to the analysts, because I did have one more. We talked about Van Gundy, Hubie, Walt. You also did games with Bill Walton for a while, which I would assume prepared you for Jeff Van Gundy's sort of.
No, I was I work with Bill and with Snapper Jones, who passed away a year and a half ago, who was one of the brightest basketball guys and one of the most beautiful guys you could meet. I work with the two of them together. And I remember the first time I worked, I was filling in for Tom Hammond, and I had watched Bill, and I knew how, you know, he would go off and go on. And so Bill tells me the first time we worked together, he goes, "Listen, if I'm going off and you want me to stop, just grab my arm." I'm like, "Okay, that's going to be hard for me to do because of, you know, I know Bill Walton's history as this great player, but." Snapper says to me too, because just grab his arm, he'll stop. So we start the game, and Bill's talking with Snapper for about 6 minutes. I haven't spoken, it seems like it was about an entire quarter, because Bill just won't stop. So I grab his arm, and of course he doesn't stop, he just keeps talking. And then you know, when we went to commercial, Snapper looks to me and he says, "You got to really grab it, really," and he'll stop. And eventually, you know, you get used to doing it, and we became good pals. And he was such a pleasure to work with, because he had so much fun. But I will say this, and Dave Pasch knows this now as well as anybody: you have to, and this might sound like a silly thing, Jimmy, but you have to listen to everything he says.
Right.
You know, when you're doing a game, you've got a producer talking in your ear. You've got a stage manager sometimes handing you a promo sheet you got to read. So your mind can drift once in a while, and you might not catch exactly what your analyst says.
Right.
But you can't do that with Bill, because he might say something so outlandish that if you don't say anything, it's going to seem like you agree with it. And you can put yourself in a bad spot because he says some crazy stuff. But
yes,
he's a delight to work with. I loved my time with him. I'm hoping at some point, someday we'll be reunited to call a game, a random game somewhere. But he was really fun. I've been so blessed with him and Steve Jones and Doug Collins. I work with a lot at Olympics and NBC. Doug Collins is one of the smartest basketball minds ever, and just a great, great partner. I worked with PJ Carlissimo for a year at NBC, and he was phenomenal. Matt Gukas, there's so many that I know I should probably name guys, because I'm sure I'm going to leave a couple out.
Well, I love what you said about making sure as the play-by-play man you listen to Walton and then respond, because it reminded me of during the college basketball season, when Pasch asked him who he'd like to see as UCLA head coach, and he said, with all seriousness, Barack Obama.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So if Dave's listening to the producer and doesn't respond to that, You know, then you're in trouble. Then he's enabling this crazy man on the air. So it's something that you always had to do with Bill.
Do you ever text Dave Pash and say, like, oh, that was a wild one with Bill last night, or you know, good job controlling Bill last night, or something like that?
I'll send him the occasional I understand. I understand text.
Yeah.
Because unless you work with him, it's hard to put into words. But he is, with all the craziness, it's nonstop fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now I totally had forgotten this until this morning when I was doing some prep for this interview. I had completely forgotten that it was you and Walton on the call behind the mics for the Malice at the Palace. Then I went and watched the video, and I'm thinking to myself, my God, if that happened today, with the way things are with social media and the internet and all this, it's amazing. You know, Ron Artest now is sort of like this, I don't know if lovable is the right word, but he's, you know, this goofy character type, but that happens today. I mean, people would shun him like there's no tomorrow.
There are so many things like that. That if you said it happened today, the narrative would be so different. That's one of them.
I'll
never forget that night. And Jim Gray, who was with us that night as a sideline, it's one every once in a while when we all get together, we occasionally bring that up because that was one of those ones you never forget.
It's one of, I had not watched it in so long, and then I watched it I was blown away that it was you and Walton on the call. And you know, I think if you haven't watched it, what's interesting is that it doesn't start out that crazy. It starts out as the regular NBA sort of scuffle, and then the fan throws the drink and Artest goes, and then obviously it goes to another level. Do you remember calling that, and what was going through your head in terms of, did you ever fear for safety at that point? Did you think things could get out of control?
What I remember was we started to get nervous when the fans, we were on the opposite side of the benches, so we had a great view of it. And the fans from the opposite side were all coming down towards the court. And that was starting to get, this could really get out of hand, because it seemed once one little skirmish was broken up, another one started. It seemed like it went on for half an hour, and the security couldn't get a handle on it. And I remember the only time I was a little worried for safety was the fans behind us on the other end of the court, they started to come down. And that's when I was like, oh my goodness, if they don't get this done pretty quickly, we might have to get up, because it was really out of control.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I actually had some experience in calling basketball fights. The Knicks back in that time, when I was a Knick radiocaster and first started doing TV, they seemed like they got in a fight like every other week.
Yes.
You know, whether it was the Alonzo Mourning fight, there was that unbelievable fight with Doc Rivers and Kevin Johnson in Phoenix.
Yes. Greg Anthony was the
Miami fights. Yeah. There was all these fights. So I had it some experience doing it. The first time you broadcast a basketball fight, you hyperventilate, and I'm sure you get carried away. But when you do it a few times, okay, you just go by, all right, I'm calling it like I'm calling the game. You're doing play-by-play. All right, that pass happened here, or that punch was thrown here. These guys are shoving each other here, as opposed to these guys are fighting for a rebound. So you almost do play-by-play until it's over, and then you go back and put it in perspective and give your opinion or your feeling. But while it's going on, I think the worst thing to do is editorialize. I think that you have to wait. If I ever had to give advice on somebody calling a fight that breaks out on a basketball game, that's what I would say. Document the fight, almost do play-by-play of it, and then get into the editorializing and the big picture when it's done.
I do remember when the fight was going on, Bill dropped a good, this is an absolute disgrace.
He was actually, Jimmy, he was hurt by it.
Yeah.
Because he knew it was a black eye for the sport at the time. And, you know, nobody loves basketball more than Bill. So he was really bothered by it. And we all knew when we went back, and I think we must have stayed up till 4 o'clock. We had a late dinner because nobody could go to sleep.
Right.
That we just spent the night talking about the impact it was going to have. And we knew it was going to be an impact both for individual players and the league overall to make changes.
Before we wrap up, I have to ask, because I've been in New York my whole life, grew up here. Ooh, that was a good sound. Doorbell?
That's actually my ringtone.
Ooh.
of my cell phone.
That's a unique one. You'll always know when it's your phone with that one. I got to ask, like, I grew up in New York, Knicks fan, but I grew up a diehard WFAN, Mike and the Mad Dog fan, and they had Imus on the Fan with Mike and the Mad Dog, and you were part of the show, and I remember back then being fascinated that I'd get like the serious Mike Breen NBA broadcaster at night, and during the day you were really cutting it up on this risque show. What are your memories of doing the Imus show? And it must have been so fun for you to be able to show that humorous side of you. You know, when you're doing the play-by-play, you're doing the straight broadcast. And on the Imus show, you definitely showed a different side of your personality.
It was such a great time. The show was really popular. But the people on it, not just Imus, Charles McCord, Bernard McGurk, who now has his own show with Sid Rosenberg on WABC, they had these voiceover guys, Al Rosenberg and Larry Kenny, Lou Ruffino. There was just so much talent on it that you felt like, oh my goodness, how am I going to keep up with these people? When I first started, I didn't think I could be in that satirical genre, so to speak. I'm just going to do the sports and they can make fun of me and that'd be fine. But Imus convinced me. He goes, listen, it's two different things. He says, you're not going to hurt your sports credibility by poking fun and having fun. It's that people will know that you're a play-by-play guy, but you have to loosen up. And I mean, for the first 6 months, I was miserable. I would come home to my wife and say, I don't know if I can do this, because they were just pounding away at me. Fortunately, I grew up with three older brothers who used to not only verbally abuse me, but physically took their shots as well. So I had a little bit of a thick skin, and eventually I got to see Imus. You know what? He's right. I can have some fun. I can make some jokes and do some comedy and humor. And it was fun. And because it was all spontaneous, to be able to react to what they would say, I always felt helped me as a play-by-play guy. What happened? I normally don't tell this story, but somebody's asked me recently, what's the best compliment you ever had? And, you know, for like a radio play-by-play guy, one time I had a blind woman call me and tell me I made the game come to life for her. She could see the game. And that's as good as it gets if you're a radio sportscaster. Or, you know, if somebody tells you, I can tell that your passion for the sport and that you love the sport, that's what comes through. That's a wonderful compliment to get. But I went to see Jerry Seinfeld once at Radio City, and I got a chance to meet him after the game. And I didn't know that Seinfeld was an Imus listener. And Seinfeld says to me, hey, you were really funny on Imus. And I couldn't talk. I was like, Jerry Seinfeld just told me I was funny. And I even said to him, I said, do you have any idea what that means to me, what you just said? So that's one of the things that came of Imus. I got Jerry Seinfeld to tell me I was funny.
That's as good as it gets.
But I always felt it was the talent around that just rubbed off on you and gave you guidance and support. It was a great time. You can't do those kind of shows anymore.
Right.
But it was, at the time, it was, you know, it just was so much fun, and FAN was at its peak, and Imus was at its peak, and I really learned an unbelievable amount.
That's Jerry Seinfeld telling you that you're funny is as good, that's as good as it gets. You can't top it right there.
I was speechless. At first I couldn't talk. He must have thought, this guy's an idiot. I mean, he can't even talk, but that's one I'll never forget.
That's a good one. And a great way to end the podcast. I appreciate you coming on. I had a lot of fun about going through your career here. And I should let everyone know, keep ESPN happy. The ESPN has the Western Conference Finals with Mike Breen, Jeff Van Gundy, Mark Jackson. And then, of course, the NBA Finals. No LeBron this year. I'm going to miss him, but I think the new blood that'll be in there, at least from the East, could be interesting. For the finals.
Well, that's a beautiful part now. Obviously, LeBron's out, but you've got Giannis, you've got Lillard, you've got
Embiid,
right. You've got Jokic, you've got Kawhi. There's some brilliant young players that are now getting a chance to shine without LeBron, and it's great that they're getting the recognition.
All right. Thanks for coming on, Mike. I appreciate it. We'll be listening, and good luck with Jeff Van Gundy doing the finals, and everyone will be waiting for his.
Thank you, Jimmy. Yes. My pleasure.
All right. Take it easy. All right. My thanks to Mike Breen. Fun conversation. Guy's been doing the NBA finals for a long time. I was since 2006 now. And he will take center stage in a couple of weeks when the finals take place again. So I appreciate him coming on, especially during the playoffs. If you did not listen last week, we had Ian Rappaport on the show from the NFL Network. 2 weeks ago, Jim Nance. So go into the archives, check those out, give them a listen, download, subscribe. I appreciate it. And we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast.